Welcome to the Michael Slate Show. I'm your host, Michael Slate. Well, the world is going through some wild shaking right now, especially inside the walls of U.S. imperialism. Just think about what has been going on over the last few weeks. And if you're not worried and outraged, then there's a big, big problem. The Trump regime is rolling over every vestige of what America has called democracy, threatening war on the planet, mass deportations of immigrants, forcing women to become lesser humans dedicated to serving men and bringing forward children, and on and on and on. There is no end to the danger posed by this Nazi brigade of death. This week's show will dig into all of this, including what people need to be doing in opposition to it all. At the back end of the show, we'll be listening to a conversation I had at the end of last year with writer and activist Paul Street concerning the danger posed to all of humanity by the Trump-Pence machine. And opening the show up, I am very pleased to be welcoming back to the show Sansara Taylor. Sansara is a writer for Revolution Newspaper and RevCom.us and an advocate for the leadership of Bob Avakian, the chairman of the Revolutionary Communist Party and the new communism that he's brought forward. Sansara is also one of the initiators of the organization Refuse Fascism. Sansara, welcome to the show.
Hi, Michael. It's very good to be with you. Thank you.
Yeah, you too. Well, what do you think about this, the situation and what's going on now? Because I know you've done a lot of thinking and a lot of speaking about it, but it's really, on one level, it's sort of the stuff is there and it keeps grinding out and growing worse and worse and worse. And the need for people, for there to be some opposition to this, need for people to step up and even just like start calling it out, is very, very sharp, but needs a lot more work. Let's talk about this, the situation overall to begin with.
Yeah, I think it's important to talk about what just happened with the vote in the Senate to deny any witnesses, any new evidence, any real even semblance of an actual trial to discern the truth and to hold Trump to account for the crimes that he was charged with in the impeachment. And you know, I think we can't skip over what it means. A lot of people, it's not just that Trump, the longer he remains in power, the more harm he does. That's true. But there's also a watershed with this, in that really, you know, if you listen to the Republicans who voted against witnesses and who now are saying, obviously, that they're going to acquit him, many of them are admitting that he did the things the Democrats accused him of and proved with tremendous evidence that he had done. The obstruction of Congress and the abuse of power. But they say it doesn't matter because what Trump is doing to get reelected is in the interest of the country. So if it's in Trump's interest and Trump thinks his interests are the interests of the country, therefore it's not impeachable. This is a massive assault on the rule of law, on the separation of powers. It is a massive assault of elevating Trump and the executive above the law. I think that people have to reckon with and have not fully come to grips with the significance of what this means, the implications of what this means. I heard a legal expert talking about it, actually one of the experts who was quoted by Alan Dershowitz, Trump's lawyer, who came out later and said, you know, Dershowitz really distorted my argument. But the lawyer said, you know, if Trump wanted to argue, if he wanted to send the military to round up all black people because black people are more likely to vote for Democrats and getting a Democrat in power would be against what Trump thinks the national interest is, this is a rationale that could be defended with the rationale the Senate just used to argue against convicting him. So I think people have to reckon with what this means. Trump is above the law if he can claim that he sees it in the national interest. Number two, it's a massive assault on the truth and on evidence as a standard and criteria. In the House, the Republicans said they didn't vote to impeach because they claimed the Democrats didn't prove their case. They had no direct testimony about Trump's withholding aid from Ukraine in order to get Ukraine to do his dirty work against Biden and against the elections. And so Bolton comes forward and says, I personally heard Trump say this, and he's released a manuscript, and he's stated that he's willing to testify. And all of a sudden, the Republican fascist party says, you know what, we don't care. Doesn't matter. Evidence doesn't matter. They changed their standard, and they even abandoned the argument they used in the House, and they just said, doesn't matter. We don't want to know the truth. We don't want the truth to go on the record, and we're going to acquit anyhow. And so these are key components of fascism. And I think we do have to pause and understand the watershed of what this ruling is going to mean. And then you have Trump in power, who is vindictive and going to be feeling vindicated. And he has, he's a vengeful person, and his, and the whole fascist program is one that seeks revenge and to bludgeon those in society who are not going along with his program. So you've seen in the last week, as he's remained in power, six more countries banned in his travel ban, including Nigeria, the most, the largest, most populous country in Africa. You've seen them enact a wealth criteria for immigrants and green card applicants from every part of the world. These are atrocious crimes that are going to cost lives and immiserate lives and separate families and cause misery and suffering. And it's just some of the dimensions. You saw a ruling with these Christian fascists that Trump is packing into the courts. You saw a ruling that is breaking down further the separation of church and state. And on many fronts, this fascism is advancing. And then with this acquittal of Trump, which is all but guaranteed, you see this being given sanction and Trump being even more unfettered from any constraints of the rule of law, of the separation of powers, of anything like that. So the people have to recognize this, and the need for people to act themselves and to recognize, this is the other big lesson of this impeachment, is that the people are going to have to act to be a check on this. The Democratic Party cannot be relied on to fight for the interests of the people. They put up a prosecution of Trump. They proved their case. They said it's illegitimate without witnesses. Pelosi said that. But then they sat there, and they're legitimating an acquittal. They didn't walk out. They didn't call people to come into the streets and say this must not be accepted. They went along with it. They're going along with it because to them, the stability and maintenance of their system, they're part of the same system, capitalism, imperialism, they're different than the fascists, the Republican Party, but they're, to them, their system and its stability is more important than justice. And the people, if we want our interests represented, where justice is more important than order, especially when that's the order of fascism, we have to mobilize from below to stop this. The Democrats won't do it, and also it has to be stopped on the basis of the crimes of this regime against immigrants, against LGBTQ people, against women, against the environment, against all the crimes of white supremacy, the whole program, which, again, the Democrats did not indict over. So I think you see, on the one hand, an escalation of this fascism. On the other hand, you see the fight, but a partial fight, and ultimately a capitulation once again by the Democratic Party. And then you see the need for the people to act from below in mass protest and nonviolent protest to repudiate this. And ultimately, it's going to take a mass protest that drives them from power. And then there's an even deeper thing that I hope we'll get into, which is an indictment of the entire system and the need for a radically different system for an actual revolution.
Mm-hmm. We'll definitely get into that, but I have a couple more questions for you before we do. And just off of the things that you were saying earlier, I mean, that's one of the things that really struck me, is this whole point about, it's a very dangerous situation and a deadly situation in many ways, and including for people to simply rely on the workings of the system that somehow solve things. You know, the fact that people might be thinking that those who hold the reins in the U.S. today have swept away all that, and they've swept away all kinds of the protections that people supposedly had legally and stuff. And they've made it actually seem like, you know, or to not seem like, but to be real, where they've cleared the way for someone like Trump to actually be, not only be exonerated, but to actually step up and take things even further in the direction of fascism. And that's something I think is not, I don't know. I mean, I think it's not very well grasped by people generally in society. People don't understand, or they've neglected to even listen to, this is the rise of fascism. And it has to be recognized and it has to be responded to in a way that's very different than what's happening now.
Yeah, I think, you know, you have a strange phenomenon in this society right now. I had it where, I'm going to share one conversation, but I think it typifies a lot, where somebody was, who is deeply opposed to Trump, to the Pence, to the whole program that they're implementing, who has come to the protest against child separation, who is really torn up about what's happening. And they said, you know, we've really got to mobilize for the elections because we've got to vote Trump out. There's nothing more important than the elections. And then they said in the next breath, they said, that is, if there even is an election. Mm-hmm. That is, if Trump even respects it, if he's voted out. And I want to speak to the second part first, which is that this, the idea that Trump would lose, first of all, is a gamble. The idea that he would leave peacefully, even if he lost, is something that no one reasonably should count on. and gamble the future of humanity on. His own lawyer, Michael Cohen, said he wouldn't leave peacefully. Trump is out there all the time saying, I've got the military, I've got the police, I've got the rough people. They're acting nice now, but if they need to, I'll use them. He's out there calling the lawful process of impeachment a coup. His social base of fascists, you know, heavily armed white supremacists and other racists and bigots are out there talking about preparing for a civil war. They are preparing for a scenario that does not accept a defeat. So, you know, the idea that you can bank on the elections to stop this is delusional. And yet, too many people who recognize that are still desperately clinging to it because, you know what, I think there's a couple things. One, it's scary to confront that it's going to take struggle to stop this fascist regime and its program. And people are too busy, frankly, thinking about themselves and their own safety and their own risks and their own reputations and their own comfort and their own children and their own lives. They're too busy being afraid for what will happen to all that and not enough thinking about and being motivated by their fear over what's going to happen to humanity, what's going to happen to the planet, what's going to happen to all the children on this planet if this regime stays in power. And there is a question of stop being so self-absorbed in the selfie culture of America and thinking about humanity first. Then there's some reckoning with the fact that there is another path, and I think a lot of people don't know this. They know and they don't know, but all over the world, people have taken to the streets in massive numbers, in sustained, repeated, that is determined, coming back again and again, protests that grows and grows and creates a political crisis where you force out a ruler that is hated and rejected, where you go outside the normal channels. When those normal channels are being disrespected and destroyed and sabotaged by a fascist regime in power, you go outside those channels. You don't rely on those channels. And this is what the RefuseFascism.org movement has been fighting for, is mass protests from below. And we have not succeeded in that, and that's a big challenge. And everybody has to put themselves to joining with trying to figure out and working to break through on that.
When you say that, what is it that you're thinking actually is what needs to be done, what needs to be spoken to, what people need to wrestle with in terms of this? Because it's not normal times, and nothing's normal in this situation now. And that it's also very true that what's urgently needed is a different kind of protest. But I think there's actually got to be some understanding of what exactly that would mean. I think it's important for people to even be able to grasp that in order to step into the fray.
Yeah, well, I want to take a further step back for just a moment, because mm-hmm. I know you know, and probably most of your listeners know, I'm a follower of Bob Avakian, and I'm an advocate for the new communism, the new synthesis of communism, and the revolution based on that that he has forged and that he is actively leading. And I think that most fundamentally, this system itself needs to be overthrown. It needs to be put an end to. It needs to be replaced with a system that is not rooted in white supremacy, that is not rooted in global plunder of the planet, that is not rooted in the long history and present reality of misogyny and patriarchy, that is not rooted in the plunder of the world's resources and destruction of the planet and the building of walls to keep people out whose homelands the U.S. destroys. We actually need a radically different world. This is a system that gave rise to fascism. The Trump phenomenon is deeper than Trump's personality. It's actually driven by the crisis and the destructiveness and instability that the system of American capitalism and imperialism has caused in the world. And so fascism, Avakian has made this point, and he's argued it very well in a talk that's at RevCon.us called The Trump-Pence Regime Must Go. He says fascism is one solution on the terms of this system to try to hammer this society back into shape when it's being pulled apart in many different ways because of the dynamics, because of the results of its own system and the chaos and the destruction that it sows. So reasserting white supremacy, which is rooted in this country, reasserting America first, reasserting this blind, jingoistic, Christian, fascist, marching, unthinking obedience to a biblical literalist interpretation of the Bible. Hammering this into place is a way for this system to pull itself and hold itself together when a lot of its own workings are causing it to be pulled apart. And then the Democrats themselves don't have an answer for it because they don't have an answer for the immigration crisis that their system has caused. They don't have an answer for the environment. So their system doesn't have an answer. They have a difference. That's why they impeached Trump over abuse of power and obstruction of Congress. They impeached over elements of his fascism, but not over the whole program, because they have a different style. They'd like to rule the empire, but they also want to rule the empire. And I think people need to confront that America was never great. America cannot be made good. And you need to lift your sights to a different kind of world. And frankly, you don't need to understand this to come together with refused fascism to drive out this regime. You don't need to agree with what I'm saying. If you want what Bernie is fighting for, if you want what Elizabeth Warren is fighting for, you got to confront that that's not possible if fascism consolidates either. So refuse fascism is a broader unity than what I'm describing. But I think there's a need for people to increasingly break free of the limits and the confines of thinking that this is the best of all possible worlds and we have to work within it, most fundamentally because we do need another world. We do need the revolution that Avakian has been leading and forging a new framework for. And frankly, the more we have people wrestling with that, and the more that that's growing as a pole in society, I think it will help people break free of the killing confines of just marching along with the options the system gives you, which is keeping people marching along towards accommodation and, frankly, at this point, collaboration with fascism.
Mm-hmm. Now, just along those same lines, you know, this point about the that, again, it's the thing that keeps coming up in my mind is that, you know, we actually are facing, we have to rise to meet a life or death challenge that's out there now, that's rooted in the society and the world right now. And the question that a lot of people, I wonder, we don't have the numbers of people rising up right now. There's a fight to actually get those numbers. I was really pleased to see the reaching out to, you know, all these different areas in the country and, you know, bringing the struggle to people and hoping, and basically, hopefully people that are there are going to be taking it up and spreading it even further. But there's this whole question of the, you know, and again, the importance of people knowing and understanding that the future of humanity is actually in danger. And it really demands that we rise to meet this whole situation, this whole challenge that you've been talking about. And also, yes, stepping up in the ways that you've been talking about to step up against this. But it's also what people do. I get a sense, I know a couple of people I was talking with, you know, a little bit earlier, and it was sort of just right off the top of their mouths. It was sort of like, well, you know, I don't know, we could vote or we could do this or we could do that, you know, but people weren't really, or they'd shake their head and say, yeah, but what are you going to do, you know? And there's a lot of, still when you dig into it, there's with these people, there's a lot of anger, but there's a question of what people do matters very much so in what we come out of this with, or how we deal with this, because this is a very dangerous situation, and I think one that's like pretty much unparalleled in the history of the world right now. So
mm-hmm.
I'd like to talk about that a little.
Yeah, let me say this: I think a lot of people genuinely don't know that there's another way for them to act. People genuinely don't know that there's, first of all, a radical alternative to the whole system of American capitalism and imperialism. That this is what the life work Bob Avakian has dedicated himself to. He's written a constitution for the new socialist republic in North America that is a framework where the economy is not based on profit above all. It's based on meeting the needs of the people and the world revolution and caring for the environment. That's got a framework where we can overcome patriarchy and white supremacy and the division of the world into different nations and borders. People don't know this. People also don't know that there's a path. It's been erased. It's been summed up incorrectly for people. The history has been written by those who don't want this to be known, that there's a way to act from below, outside the normal channels. Change does not come. It never has come through the ballot box. That's a lie. It's a myth, and it's a harmful myth that you have to go outside those channels, even short of revolution, to wage resistance. And I don't mean a protest to get out the vote, a protest to make you feel better, and then you get serious and you start lobbying. No, I mean a protest that's sustained until your demand is met, and that's what compels those in power to respond, even short of revolution. So people don't know this, and they need to know it, and those of us who know it have to scream it from the rooftops and spread it everywhere. At the same time, I want to be straight up and be honest with everybody, and people should be honest with themselves. Way too many people are seeking comfort and using as an excuse for their inaction and their conciliation and collaboration with fascism the notion that, well, there's nothing I could do anyhow. And honestly, it becomes a rationale for acting like a good German, and it's not excusable. It's not excusable to tell yourself you can't make a difference. It's not true, and it's an immoral excuse. And if you're hearing me, then you got to do the work to find out that there is an alternative. And I mean, like, go to revcom.us and read and watch the speeches from Babovic and hear. Seriously, somebody's done the work to forge a whole different way the world could be, who's summed up previous revolutions, who studied them, what they accomplished, where they fell short, how we could do better, what we need to do differently, how we'd handle the arts, how we'd handle education, how we'd handle the diversity of cultures in a way that respects the cultures but is also challenging and unleashing a challenge from within different peoples and streams of people's experience to challenge outmoded notions within each culture, and doing this in tandem with changing the economy step by step and overcoming divisions that have been centuries old, instituted. Okay, so lift your sights to this. There's a way the world could be radically different. And fight for it and help break other people out of their passivity. And as part of that, let's get up off the notion that America is the best way the world could ever be organized. It's not. It's a country founded by slave owners. They own human beings. They rationalize it in their constitution. And yes, it allowed that constitution for slavery to be abolished and the oppression of black people to take a different form. But that constitution is an exploiter's vision of freedom. There's a different way the world could be. Let's stop clinging to things that have produced monstrosities and lift our sights to a radically different world, an actual revolution. And as we do it, let's step outside our comfort zones and put humanity first. Put something bigger than yourself and wage struggle that, yes, it will not satisfy you in 5 minutes. It will not achieve your goals in 2 days. But no justice has ever come. No advance for humanity has ever come without repeated, determined struggle and sacrifice. And so, you know, we have to dispel with, Bacon has made the point, we have to dispel with the notion that there's such a thing as painless progress. We can debate what it's going to take. We can debate the way forward. But one thing that should be beyond debate at this point, unfortunately it's not, is the idea that you can sit back and act as an isolated individual within the channels that this system has offered you and get anything other than what this system has produced and continues to produce. And it is monstrosities. It is monstrosities now in the form of a white supremacist fascist regime in power that just got sanctioned from the other branch of government that's supposed to be a check on it, just gave it the sanction to act above the law and to deny the truth. And this is a wake-up call. There's no check on that power except for the people acting from below. So we can debate how, we can debate what the future should be like. All of this we should, but we have to get out of our comfort zone and take responsibility for resisting this in a meaningful way. That's what RefuseFascism.org is. It's a movement of people from different perspectives who are confronting that the regime is fascist and it needs to be driven out. And then as we get into that together, you know, lift your sights to an actual revolution and a different way the world could be.
Yeah, definitely. Now, in relation to that, and probably is the last thing that we're going to be able to talk about, is there is a protest called now, and it's not just come one day and go home. It's actually really, it's something that people really need to step up. It's related to what you've just been saying. People really need to step up and find the ways to be in the streets, to be fighting this, because this is a place where the line has been drawn in a major way. And what happens, the response of people in relation to this, has a lot to do with what develops in the future. So I wanted you to talk about that a bit. I know there's like a lot of plans going on. It'd be good for people to know what's happening, where they can go to find out about more. That would be great.
Well, RefuseFascism.org is holding protests at the time of the vote over whether to acquit Trump, which everybody knows and is expecting will be a vote to acquit Trump on Wednesday. So we're holding protests, and people should go to RefuseFascism.org and find where the protests are near you. I'm in D.C. I've been down in D.C. for the whole Senate trial. We've been doing protests here almost every day and trying to call people forward. And honestly, if there had been 10,000 people who had come and stayed in front of the Capitol every day during this Senate trial, we might have seen witnesses called. We might have seen a shift. If this had grown to 100,000, if it had grown beyond that, things might have played out differently. So we did not succeed in moving and compelling this impeachment trial to move towards Trump's removal. But it matters that his acquittal be repudiated. It's being legitimized in the halls of power. It needs to be repudiated by the people. So that's number one. Number two, after this, we are taking a period to regroup RefuseFascism.org because we've been struggling for people to come out. We tried to launch this sustained protest. We did something very correct and very important in October last year. We launched 5 weeks of continuous protest in a dozen cities across the country to launch this growing movement from below, continuous protest to drive out the regime. it was very important, it was very significant, but it didn't grow. And people largely sat back. People cheered it. They gave us the thumbs up. Everybody loved it when they saw it marching by. I mean, Trump people hated it, but a lot of people loved it and genuinely, but they didn't feel that they had to join it. And so this is a problem, and I don't think, you know, we all make mistakes. We've made plenty of mistakes, but I don't think this was because we made mistakes. I think this is because the American people are stubbornly in denial about what we're facing and at this point refusing to get out of their comfort zone to stop it. And so we are going through a period. We're going to be, and we're calling on people to join with us in this. We're holding meetings around the country. We're strategizing. We're figuring out how do we move forward. Because one thing is for sure, this fascism of Trump is going to be on a rampage. It's going to step up. They feel vindicated, and they feel vindictive, and they've got a program to achieve. So it's going to be even more important that people join with RefuseFascism.org, get organized, and figure out how we go forward and when we can launch this again with a greater chance of succeeding in the mass protest it will take.
Mm-hmm. All right, Sansar, thank you very much for joining us today. And I'm really looking forward to talking to you again, because this is something that's actually extraordinarily important. You know, all the things that have been going on over the last period of time, this is extremely important, what develops around this for the future of humanity. So let's stay in touch, all right?
Okay, great. Thanks, Michael.
All right, thank you. We're going to listen to a clip from Bob Avakian, the chairman of the Revolutionary Communist Party right now. And the name of that clip is, "What Are We Facing? From the Trump-Pence Regime Must Go. In the Name of Humanity, We Refuse to Accept the Fascist America. A Better World Is Possible."
Calling this regime fascist is not an insult, but speaks to the terrible reality. There is a direct line from the Confederacy to the fascists of today, and a direct connection between their white supremacy, their open disgust and hatred for LGBT people as well as women, their willful rejection of science and the scientific method, their raw America First jingoism and trumpeting of the superiority of Western civilization, and their bellicose wielding of military power, including their expressed willingness and blatant threats to use nuclear weapons, to destroy countries with the finger of a demented bully on the nuclear button. A regime that, without exaggeration, threatens not just greatly heightened suffering for the masses of humanity, but the very existence of humanity itself.
I'm really pleased to welcome to the show my guest, Paul Street. And we're going to be talking with Paul about a piece he wrote for Counterpunch called Beyond Impeachment, Remove This Regime from Below. And he's a prolific author, but his most current book is They Rule, The 1% Versus Democracy from Paradigm. Let's jump into this, because when I read your piece in Counterpunch, it's actually something that I've been like, and we've been doing on the show a lot, really stressing to people that not only are these not normal times, but these are times that demand some things that people don't ever usually consider as like viable or necessary. And that these are times that actually are demanding quite a bit from people if actually the planet is going to survive in any conceivable way. So welcome to the show, man.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay. One of the things that you say in this is, and a lot of people, I mean, I've talked to a lot of people who talk about, well, the regime has to be forced out, but they don't really have any idea of either how or why, you know, and it's actually at that point when the big questions pop up. When you're talking about there being a need to actually force this regime out, there's very big questions that are posed, and they're critically important questions if this is actually going to happen. And I know you pay a lot of attention to that, you know, so let's talk about that, including the immediacy of it and the immediacy of the need.
Well, yeah, so you talk about immediacy. This is not just your normal bourgeois presidency. We had awful presidencies throughout my entire lifetime. I mean, I could go back to LBJ and Nixon. I'm old enough. I was in grade school then. Criminal, mass murderers, corporatist, and all of that. But it seems like the Republican regimes, with each reincarnation or each version, have sort of gotten progressively more white nationalist, fascistic, racist, and all of that. I think that's fair to say. Maybe the original George Bush was not ever more fascistic compared to Reagan. Maybe actually the same or somewhat less. But Nixon to Reagan, certainly to George, the second George Bush, 43. Not Trump. And Trump seems to have sort of crossed the line from quantity to quality. Not just quantitatively worse, but qualitatively worse. And in fact, neo-fascistic, if not fascistic. You know, running a bunch of just classically fascistic narratives, palingenetic, full-on redemptive white nationalism, the full-on demonization of a racially demonized minority, in his case, Mexican-American and other and Central American immigrants, an open embrace of the use of political violence against his perceived political enemies, an open and really extreme repudiation of bourgeois law and constitutional norms. You know, today I just heard on the news that Trump made a reference to, what did he call it, this trumped up or this fake or this so-called emoluments clause. My God, the emoluments clause is Article 1, Section 9 of the Constitution. Anyone can go online and read it up. He's acting like the emoluments clause is a made-up piece of fake news. He demonizes the independent bourgeois media as the enemy of the people. He has actually said that he might, through executive order, roll back or abolish or undo the constitutional right of birthright citizenship. That is, that citizenship is granted to anyone that's born in the United States of America. It's just absolutely extraordinary. And so this is different. And it's existentially essential for this regime to go on numerous levels, but one of them for me is environmental and is ecological. No, Trump did not invent the environmental crisis. The ecological crisis, which is really, in broad historical terms, quite imminent and ongoing. We are at 415 parts per million CO2 in the environment right now, heading towards 450, if not 500 parts per million by 2050. That's the Antarctic, okay? That's the end of the Amazon rainforest. That's the end of all chances and prospects for an organized, decent human existence. And I have the distinct impression that if Trump gets a second term and stays in office, while he did not invent this crisis, he can lock it in. He can make it permanent. He can carry it past the last remaining tipping points for any chances of any kind of decent future. On numerous levels, this regime has to go, and it has to go more quickly, probably, than what the normal bourgeois institutions are going to do in terms of eliminating it.
Well, how do you actually bring that out to people? Because one of the things I wanted to ask you about right away was, you know, you do speak to people. You speak to people who are arguing that, yes, I know he's really bad. He's like, and, you know, everything from the simpleton saying that he's embarrassing to the actual people who even are saying, well, he does represent sort of the heart and soul of America, if you really understand what it is. But that let's not rush. Let's not be rash in what we're doing, that we should let the process unfold through the normal process of elections if we're really going to be able to walk out of this alive.
Oh, well, let's not be rash. Well, you know, it's hard to know what to say now, particularly with this latest impeachment crisis. It's clear as day. I mean, it's sitting right there. They've got him on an open and egregious abuse of power. Now, I don't say that Ukraine gate. They actually have whistleblower reports, which appear to be slam dunk and accurate, that the guy did a ruling class no-no. He used the imperial leverage of the U.S. presidency, which is used all the time. Presidents bully other countries. What the ruling class no-no is that Pelosi, I think to some extent to her surprise, has had handed to her in her lap and enforced her hand, is they've got him using the imperial leverage of the U.S. presidency to bully a foreign leader into helping dig up political dirt on a political opponent. In other words, he wants to use the imperial power of the presidency to enhance his own domestic political power. You don't do that as far, even as the ruling class is concerned. They've got him on that. Now, I mean, you know, for those of us on the left, that's probably, you know, like 15 or 16 or 17 down on the list of our articles of impeachment for this guy. But they've got him. And, you know, I don't think they're going to be able to hold public opinion and hold the public attention and the attention of the media much past Thanksgiving if they don't move on that fairly quickly. So even in a sort of normal political kind of sense, I think they better move pretty quickly on that. So we'll just see how long that takes. But from our perspective, this guy now is like a cornered rat. He's an extremely dangerous man. He's psychologically disordered. He's a neo-fascist. He's a very venal and childish type of neo-fascist. I don't think he's capable of any kind of deep understanding of political doctrine of any kind, even fascist doctrine, though Steve Miller certainly is, and Steve Bannon certainly is, whether he is or not. But he's an incredibly malignant and vile authoritarian who's a sociopath, and God knows what kind of he might want to pull as he gets further and further pushed into the corner of impeachment, and now possibly, I'm not betting on it, and now possibly removal. So I would much rather see a popular intervention on the style and scale of what's happened in other countries to remove horrible, tyrannical regimes before he can really pull some unbelievable fake a terrorist attack, bomb a country, God knows what, right? Invade Venezuela. I mean, this guy's fully capable of wagging the dog in some very noxious and disastrous kinds of ways. So really, the sooner the people step in and get rid of him, the better for all of us, not to mention that every day this guy is tearing up environmental regulations that are spewing more and more carbon and CO2 into the environment in ways that we just can't survive.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that struck me, too, is that you argue that there's a danger to relying on impeachment as well, even though, you know, they want to get him out of there through impeachment. Fine, go ahead, get him out of there through impeachment. But you argue that there's also some real danger tied up with impeaching him, and you call it the impeachment carnival. Let's talk about that.
Well, you know, the danger is it's already bad enough with the what I call the quadrennial candidate-centered major party big media electoral extravaganzas or spectacles. I mean, these paralyzing carnivals whereupon we are all instructed that we have meaningful input in the political process. We have none, but that we are led to believe we do because we get to make marks next to names of candidates who've already been approved in advance for us by the nation's unelected dictatorships of money and empire. You know, for what? For 2 minutes, once every 4 years. I mean, it's just astonishing that we've been reduced down to that in terms of our definition of what our political input is. So that's already sort of bad enough. And, you know, that's already underway. I noticed that once Russiagate finally petered out this summer, it was almost instantaneously replaced by the candidate spectacle. You know, the Democratic presidential candidates won't have a candidate spectacle on the Republican side because they have an incumbent over there. But what? We had 20 candidates. Now we're down to 12 or whatever, and just this obsession with who they are. And it looks like that's what it's always going to be. To what? To convince us to stay glued to the tube and sitting on the couches with our clickers in our hands looking at CNN, MSNBC, and Fox News, seeing who the candidates are going to be. Then boom, then all of a sudden, Ukraine gate. I'm not a conspiracy theorist about it. I think it probably just kind of happened. Maybe I'm wrong, and it happened, and it fell in Nancy Pelosi's lap. And now we have Ukraine gate, and it's irresistible to the Democratic Party, and it's in this strange, curious tension with the candidate spectacle, you know, in terms of vying for the headlines. It's been holding the headlines for the last 3 or 4 weeks, however long it's been going on. But it becomes another excuse for all of us to just sort of sit staring at our telescreens and thinking that, oh, they'll remove him. They'll fix all of this through their constitutional process. And on top of which, then that in turn helps us fall in love with this very deeply conservative and reactionary document called the U.S. Constitution, which we're supposed to ignore the fact that it's in a profoundly reactionary document crafted by 18th century powdered wig-wearing, tight-wearing slaveholders and merchant capitalists for whom democracy was like the ultimate nightmare to, and a great threat to property. So, I don't know. There's some dangers involved in that, not to mention the danger of letting Trump off his worst crimes by narrowing down to this very constricted focus on a very limited crime. It's a real crime, but it's a relatively limited crime, and it's a relatively ruling class, intra-elite kind of crime, is exploiting the imperial power of the presidency to advance his political fortunes. You know, as opposed to the other he's done, which is, you know, I mean, separating children and families, abrogating international laws of asylum rights, fake national emergencies to build a fascist nativist wall, ecocide, which, you know, actually is an impeachable offense. Ecocide is an impeachable offense, ought to be understood as such. The preamble of the Constitution that all these policymakers and the federal government take an oath to require policymakers to respect and serve the general welfare of the population. Well, you know, the extinction of the human race by turning the planet into a greenhouse gas chamber is not exactly aligned with the general welfare. I mean, I could go on with Trump's crimes as impeachable offenses for probably the next 15 minutes. So these are dangers, absolutely. I mean, God knows we want this son of a out of there. He's a lethal, malignant threat to the human race. But maybe not this way, and not for Ukraine gates. They might throw in obstruction, and they might throw in the emoluments clause into the case for his impeachment and perhaps removal. But for us on the left, it's much, much more than that.
You know, it's very interesting to me when you say that, because actually there's something that you spoke about in that article was very important, I thought, and I think people really need to think about this. You talk about how impeachment doesn't automatically get rid of a president, and it's very difficult to do so. And in fact, no president has ever been removed through impeachment. And this is something that I think a lot of people, you know, you include that when you're talking about that, you talk about the fallacy of the people believing by we the people. And, you know, I think it's something that really politically is really disarms people, I think, when they think that this is actually the way to go, or this is what we can do. We can break the, you know, we can do this with impeachment and it'll work in our favor and all this other stuff. But there's actually never been a real impeachment.
It'll happen. You know, I would qualify that a little in that I would say that Nixon was a de facto impeachment and removal. When Barry Goldwater went in there and said they've got the Republican votes in the Senate for you not just to be impeached and removed, Nixon resigned prior to the process being fully carried out. So in a sense, it kind of did. But that's just once. And that was a case of a guy who was just egregiously caught red-handed in this idiotic break-in in the other major capitalist party, the Democratic Party's campaign headquarters, completely unnecessary, humorously enough, since McGovern didn't have a chance, the break in there, and then the tapes, you know, the White House transcripts, the taped recordings, when John Dean, you know, it was just there, you know, and he was going to be. So it kind of did with him, but that's it. It's incredibly difficult, and it's incredibly difficult on purpose. It's scary to me how many Americans don't even know what the process is. That the impeachment is like an indictment. It's only an indictment, and it requires a majority in the House. Removal takes place in the Senate, and the legal analogy to removal is conviction. And removal has a very high bar. It requires 2/3 of the U.S. Senate. And that's why it's never happened. I repeat, it would have happened with Nixon, but it's never happened. God knows Andrew Johnson, who was a friend of the slave owners after 500,000 people died fighting the Civil War to end slavery, and he couldn't be removed by the Senate. Obviously, Bill Clinton wasn't removed by the Senate. It's very hard to do. And that's on purpose, because the founders were very authoritarian and anti-democratic. They wanted to make it very, very difficult to actually remove a president. And, you know, the Constitution is so absurdly anti-democratic that right now the state of Wyoming has as many people in the U.S. Senate as the state of California. If California had the same, I think I calculated this once, if California had the same population per U.S. senator ratio as Wyoming, California would have like 38 or 39 U.S. senators, okay? Chicago or Brooklyn would all have many, many more U.S. senators than the states of Wyoming or Montana and all of that. And so you have this absurd overrepresentation of these small, rural, disproportionately white and reactionary and right-wing Republican red states in the U.S. Senate, which makes it highly unlikely. I don't rule it out completely, but highly unlikely that the U.S. Senate would actually vote to remove him. And so then you have the danger that he's impeached and not removed, and then the right-wing neo-fascist white nationalist Republican Party rallies around the notion that Trump was quote-unquote exonerated after Ukraine-gate, and that's dangerous too. That's something that Nancy Pelosi has a reason to be scared of. And it was one of the reasons she didn't want to go all the way with impeachment, with Russiagate, even though the Mueller report did have enough. It had enough for impeachment on obstruction, but she wanted to do it. She didn't want to give an exoneration moment. That could happen again. That's another reason for we the people to step in before these elites can carry their process to full fruition.
Mm-hmm. You know, another thing that you spoke about, which is really important, I think, is, and I'm familiar with this organization, I've worked with it, Refuse Fascism. You know, you cite Refuse Fascism for warning that impeachment must not be allowed to become another waiting game, another means by which millions who hate what's happening are sucked into a waiting game while the horror continues. To me, that's a really an incredibly important analysis there that people, not enough people get. You know, they just think that we can actually push for impeachment, even if it's a broader impeachment or whatever, and that then just let it go, let it go by, you know?
Well, it's an important analysis, and it's really to be noted that they have really happened upon an exceedingly dead on point there. You know, and it goes after sort of two kinds of misconceptions, the liberal misconception, the bourgeois liberal faith in these constitutional mechanisms that are part of a very deeply reactionary conservative parchment, a document from the late 18th century, and that's good enough to do it, that's going to get it done. But it's also in the phrase, there's a lot of people on the left who don't want to admit that this regime, including the soulless, sociopathic Midtown Mussolini Trump himself, and then beneath him, his insurance policy, this evangelical Christian fascist Mike Pence, that these folks together and much of the Republican Party and frankly, a good part of their base, a good maybe a quarter of the country, I don't know, are sort of become objective neo-fascistic forces in this country. I mean, this is a president, the first one that I can think of in my lifetime, who's a real threat not to honor the outcome of an electoral college count and that doesn't go his way, okay? Who just systematically and consistently defies basic elements of the bourgeois rule of law. We're dealing with something new and different here. This is not just the same old, same old. This is not just the awful, terrible corporate imperial Democratic and Republican Party that I've been writing bitterly against for many years. I'm no fan of the old-time politics before Trump, but this is something new and different, and there's a denial about that in certain parts of the left now. It's really very strange and very odd, and you get called a lesser evilist friend of the corporate Democrats, you know, which is just an absurd thing to call someone like me. I mean, my publication record stands for itself. I've been relentlessly critical of the mainstream Democratic Party since the first time I ever took pen to paper, you know. But you get accused of being a Clintonite or an Obamaite for pointing out that there are fascist elements in key positions of power, conducting a fascist style of politics in this country with a fascist style and socioeconomically and ideologically, culturally fascist base, frankly, behind it, a base that's absurdly overly represented because of the structure of American politics imposed by this deeply reactionary parchment document crafted by slave owners and elite merchant capitalists in the late 18th century. It's just, no one wants to talk about that. It's really funny. I'm always amused by the way the Constitution gets this free pass. We're just not going to talk about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. You know, one of the things when you were speaking to, I kept thinking about, I was out on the Santa Monica Pier the other day, Saturday.
Sure.
And I think a lot of people on the pier, a lot of people in the country might have been surprised about what happened because people went out there to, you know, they did an action against Trump and Pence and the regime and fascism and all this. And the action was, you know, it was a good action. It was on the beach. And then people went up to,
sure,
you know, to reach out to more people on the pier. And they were doing a die-in on the pier and all this stuff. And all of a sudden, these fascists who had been just, you know, running around with their flags and disrupting the, you know, the event down on the beach.
Was this an Extinction Rebellion event or an ecological?
No. This was called by Refuse Fascism.
Okay, sure.
And it basically was very heavy because what ended up happening is that these Nazis just, I mean, at a certain point, they came barreling down out of the, you know, out of the thing and tried to break up the rally, and they weren't able to do that. And when people were getting ready to move out up onto the pier itself, where there were a lot more people than there were on the beach at the time. And when it started, and when people were in the middle of trying to do a die-in, these Nazis just came in, and I mean, they were kicking butt, trying to anyway. They were trying to bust through the circles and get to people and intimidate people. And then one of them had a big can of what was a bear repellent and sprayed it on people's faces, you know, in the course of all this. Yeah, so it was a very heavy thing. And when you think about this, you know, you think about that this that this impeachment, it's not just that, you know, it's what we're talking about in general or what's going on with Trump and that, but also the base that Trump has, you were just speaking about, has just sort of pulled together and really worked to pull that together. That can be a mobilizer. You know, this impeachment thing can be a mobilizer of very bad things.
Oh, that's a good point. Right. That's a good point. If there's a threat that the impeachment thing mobilizes the hell out of these really dangerous and dodgy neo-fascistic elements, on one hand, while sort of demobilizing progressive forces, on the other hand, sort of out of this sense that, well, the elites have got it taken care of. They're going to get rid of this guy. They're using the good old Constitution, and it's going to be just like Nixon. Well, you know what? This is not Watergate. Richard Nixon did not have Fox News and right-wing talk radio and Breitbart and Twitter and this hyper-partisan kind of political culture where you could just segue off of a significant portion of the population and just keep them enraptured with their charismatic dear leader, you know, Donald Trump. This is a different ball of wax. And, you know, I might add also, we've got assault rifles back again. We got rid of the assault rifle ban, and a bunch of these people are armed. That was what I was going to ask you as I was listening to you talking about that incident. Were any of them armed? Because some of these people are armed. And, you know, take that incident down in Charlottesville. Mm-hmm. I've heard numerous first-person accounts of Charlottesville to the effect that Cornel West and some of the liberals and leftists and progressives who were counter-protesting against the right might have been seriously physically attacked, but for the armed resistance of Redneck Rebellion. Believe it or not, white guys from the South who are lefties, who were watching guard over this situation. I mean, this is reality, you know, out there. This does raise the question of armed self-defense. These people are extremely armed. Trump is not above triggering people. You know, sometimes I wonder if he needs the true in the streets, you know, mass mobilized brown shirts of the classic fascist era. He can freaking activate these psychotic white nationalists who've stored up ammunition and their assault rifles in their basements and, you know, waiting for the signals, these weird messages that come out of their dear leader. We have to be on guard, and it's really quite dangerous. This is yet more reason to get this guy out of here as soon as possible. And I don't know, you know, I do not look forward to the possibility of 4 more years of this guy, too. If he feels validated by the outcome in 2020, God only knows what level of repression and smackdown and payback, not just leftists, but liberals might be looking at in a Trump 2 term, but a second Trump term.
And not to mention what it's going to mean for the rest of the people in the world as well, which is, you know.
Well, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, one more
question. The rest of the world, I love to hear the Trump and left people, as I call them, the Herald Donald has some sort of peace president. He's a peace president. Okay.
Yeah, right. Now, that brings us to our last question. And you know, there's something that was very important, I think, in that you wrote in this. And, well, there was a lot that was very important, but this is something that really I think people need to consider and think about. And don't use it as an excuse for not getting out there, but actually use it as a reason to understand what's going on and then deciding what you have to do and in terms of standing up and opposing this. You said that impeachment is not a rebellion, and you argued that the best way to remove Trump is through sustained mass rebellion by the people. I couldn't agree with you more, but I want you to talk about that a little, because it's a very...
Well, you know, direct action is what really gets the goods. I was always a big fan of the late, great radical historian Howard Zinn, who had this great line in 2007 to the effect of that it's not just about sitting who's in the White House, who's sitting in the White House, it's about who's sitting in the streets. And no matter who's in the White House, nothing has ever happened without direct action in the streets. That's certainly true of the sit-down strikes in the 1930s, the Flint sit-down strikes, and the whole strike wave that spread across this country in 1936 and 1937. It's true about the civil rights movement. It required considerable long-term, not just a protest here and there, but long-term campaigns of civil disobedience across the South. That's the only reason we got the Civil Rights Act and the Voting Rights Act. I think that the death count in Southeast Asia was reduced significantly by sustained mass civil disobedience conducted by the anti-Vietnam War movement. You know, Trump's national emergency, you know what brought that to an end, actually, finally?
What's that?
You know, the government shutdown over the fake national emergency was when air service workers started calling in sick to a degree that the plane started bottling up at LaGuardia, and whole capitalist air travel network
significantly disrupted. And that was the end of that story, because working people intervened. Now, right now, in terms of whole regimes and whole governments, if we think globally, if we think just beyond U.S. shores, there's a whole bunch going on right now in terms of reversing policies and even getting rid of governments. I'm talking about Puerto Rico, where the fascist, neo-Nazi, sexist gubernatorial regime was basically overthrown by the populace through days and days and days of mass civil disobedience. Regressive and authoritarian and dangerous extradition law imposed on Hong Kong by Beijing was essentially repealed by ongoing campaigns of mass civil disobedience in Hong Kong, but it's still ongoing. There was an important gas tax that was very regressive, that was opposed by the French population last year, and was essentially forced to be repealed by sustained, pretty badass, significant campaigns of disruption and disobedience by the Gilets Jaunes. The Ecuadorian government, just a week or two ago, had to leave Quito and roll back and reverse a neoliberal austerity package, including, by the way, a regressive gas tax, by mass civil disobedience in the streets of Quito and other parts of Ecuador. The government was overthrown by a sustained mass civil disobedience in an authoritarian fascist government in Algeria last year. There are revolutions underway right now in Haiti, and I understand there are now mass protests in the streets of Lebanon. And there's a second kind of uprising in Egypt. People get this. They know this. A lot of things are coming apart at the seams right now, and the people have to enter the stage of history again and again throughout history. This is how real change occurs, not just by an election or an impeachment or letting the elites fix things. They won't fix things. Now, the last thing they want to do is put people in the streets. They want to create an illusion of progressive change, but in a way that keeps their class, property, and political privileges intact without mobilizing the populace. And we can't let them do that anymore, and we won't survive if we continue to fall prey to those kinds of false top-down solutions. We've run out of time for that.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I'm just one quick point, and you can speak to it after I do this. And I think it's important because I think, you know, people have to understand that this is not something that can wait, not just wait for elections, but that can wait for any reason. The time for action is now. That's the point. And I know Refuse Fascism has just started this new organization called Out Now.
This is an important point. This intermediate stage can be very dangerous, where he's cornered and looks like he's in trouble, but he's not out yet, and he still has all this power, and he has this regressive right-wing armed base just waiting to go off and do some horrible shit. The sooner we get this guy out of here, the better off we're all going to be.
All right,
this regime and the system that gave rise to it, because Trump is a symptom of the whole class system. We should never forget that.
Absolutely. I'm so glad you said that, too, man. This is very important that people understand that.
Right.
All right, Paul.
Anyways, he's an epitome of it. He's sort of the ultimate embodiment of soulless, egotistical capitalism.
Exactly. Exactly. Very well put. And, Paul, thank you very much for joining us today.
You bet.
All right.
You
talk
bet.
To you again soon.
Bye-bye.
Take care. All right. That about brings us to the end of yet another show. If you want to write to me, you can at mslate@themichaelslateshow.com.